Once again, the No Chill Podcast is brought to you by Life Recovery Water, offering up three tasty, thirst-quenching blends guaranteed to refuel your body while satisfying your palate. All three flavors rehydrate the body with the necessary electrolytes such as potassium, magnesium, phosphorus, and calcium. These electrolyte properties are vital to any athlete or sports enthusiast after a tough workout or training session. Replenishing the body with an all-natural product is always the best form of recovery. Life Recovery Water. Go get some today. On this episode of the No Chill Podcast, we take a look at the importance of chemistry for an NBA team. Whether it's knowing who's supposed to get the ball in crunch time, fitting in on a roster, or finding the right blend of veteran and young players, it's all about how their egos work together. From how the Warriors will make it work this season as free agency questions loom, to Melo's failure to launch in Houston, and what Jimmy Butler left behind in Minnesota, there's been no shortage of drama in the early part of this season. For Agent Zero, he's got some ideas as to why it's on the star player to take control, but more importantly, why there always must be an alpha dog in the locker room to determine who's running things. In some cases, it's clear cut, but Gil points out how more often than not, it isn't always the superstar that has the most command. We know you're going to like this one. Thanks again for supporting the No Chill Podcast. And if you haven't already, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast or check out the No Chill channel on YouTube to get episodes as soon as they drop every week. She has talked to me, and he has talked to she. When the day is coming that we must meet personally. She has talked to me. His job description includes what?
Coaching. Making sure your team is prepared each and every night to go out there and be successful.
What is the most important part of that preparation? If the coach is putting the team together day one before they step on the court, what's the most important thing that he has to have nailed down?
Game plans.
Mm-hmm. But you can have your plan all day. You can have a nice roster, balanced player personnel. But if you don't have chemistry, not going to happen.
But that's not a coach's job for chemistry. That's players.
Okay.
A coach can't, you know, I knew you were getting that, but
you were making me sweat for it, but yeah,
a coach, pulling teeth. Because a coach can't, he can't dictate dominance. He can't pick on who's the go-to guy. That's what you guys figure out playing and practicing. You guys as individuals sacrifice for the betterment of the team. The coach can't do that. He can try to drill it, but it doesn't, he can't do it. That's what a team and team players decide to do, because they're the ones that's going out there battling every night.
So what happens when players have a disagreement amongst themselves? Do they sort it out themselves? The coach just steps away and says, you guys figure this out, or do they ever weigh
in? Players got to figure it out. You know, listen, the ideal of a coach being a babysitter is this is not college basketball. You know, your coach cannot babysit you. Your coach doesn't supposed to push you. If you're a coach and you have to push your players, that means your players just don't have it. You know, so, you know, you're supposed to set your game plan, do your job in practicing this, and then they go out there and execute. That is what a coach is.
But in the NBA, you have these egos, right? Everyone was a star at some point in their career. So it's on the coach to balance these egos, manage these personalities.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to sit down and, you know, try to stroke egos. And that's all it is trying to stroke everyone's ego so everyone's happy. But at the end of the day, they're the ones with the egos. Mm-hmm. You know, and some coaches, they play better without stars, because then they get to control the team better. Some coaches are player coaches where they know how to stroke everyone's ego so everyone can play to their potential.
Well, we have a situation. The situation with the Warriors and Dre and KD, It was an on-court argument. Started there because of a play, because of a sequence where Draymond brought the ball up the court. Our guy, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, with the poke, he He lost the handle, and KD wanted the ball in that situation. He was figuring, it's coming to me. Steph obviously wasn't playing too. You know, it's my time to take over, which as a role for KD, that's his role, right? That's not Draymond's role.
Yeah, that's his role. I understand the frustration of KD, where, you know, you're the star player, the ball, you know, comes at you, of course, you know, 100% of the time. Draymond's decision to just drive and try to make something happen, was he planning on shooting it? No. You know, he is the, I call him the glue guy. He's the guy that gets the ball from Steph and gives it to Klay. He's the guy that takes it from KD, gives it to Curry. Curry to KD. So he's the glue guy that makes sure all those egos are satisfied with what they're doing. So for him to take off and try to create something, I understand.
Yeah, we've seen him do that before. And I think, aside from that strip, he probably was going to give it up. That's the funny thing is, probably was going to give it up.
No, he was giving it up because his path was not a direct path to the basket. But, you know.
But KD wanted it earlier.
Yes. So that's, it was a perfect storm for those two to argue.
But for KD, I think it was just that moment. In that moment, he was frustrated. He wanted it earlier because they took the L. He wanted that shot. Didn't happen for him. But for Draymond, seemed like something else was brewing with him. If it's because of this whole free agency situation and the pressure that's creating around the team, or the fact that he's saying,
how is that creative? I mean, wasn't he a free agent 2 years ago? Last year he was a free agent. There was no beef there. It's one of those things where Draymond was in the wrong. Instead of just biting your tongue and say, fuck, I fucked up. My bad. I should have just gave it to you. You're right.
But that's his personality. He's not going to back down
either. The egos of the locker room. See, this is that what people don't understand. The egos of the alpha male in the locker room being challenged. And he has to accept the challenge every single time. And that's what that does. KD's still bitching probably in the locker room. And Draymond has to get the last word in. And then from there, now it's poking. I'm going to fucking poke. I'm gonna let you know you're beneath me when it comes to this locker room. I am the alpha male personality here. You're just the star.
Yeah, their role is, KD is, okay, you're our scorer, our go-to guy. You do you. I'm going to be that conduit guy. I'm going to do all the dirty work that you don't want to do, okay? And I'm going to get credit for that. But remember who the alpha is in this situation.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It was basically KD probably still bitching about not getting that ball and mad in the locker room. And Draymond is like, I'm not going to let you. The team is not going to look down on me. I'm still the alpha male, and I'm going to show my dominance.
So it probably wasn't the first time something like this happened. Maybe not this.
No, it is. I can say this is the first time where you will have KD really challenge him. Because this is the first time KD didn't get the ball in that situation. I'm pretty sure him and Russell went at it plenty of times.
Yeah.
So with Draymond, all it did is they probably went too far in the verbiage. And the team is like, because you got to remember, this was a team suspension. So this is something that they decided.
I can't believe the game check, though. I think that's too much.
A suspension, one game suspension is a game check.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like when you hit a guy's income.
But what I'm saying is, wallet,
that hurts more than anything.
You miss one game, your suspension, that's what it cost him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just, so it's not like for the team, they're saying, like, there's other ways you could discipline, I guess, but to say we're going to take away some of your income, that's.
But it's part of the suspension. You get paid, you get paid 82 games. So you get paid every game check. So the fact that you got suspended for a game means you got your check gone from that game too, which is a big statement to me.
That's a kick in the nuts.
No, the statement is they're looking at this situation and saying, we can let this go. No one will ever hear about this. Or we can let KD know that we're on his side.
Well, they could handle it behind closed doors as the team, but by putting the suspension out there, that fuels the fire.
That fuels the fire, but it fuels the fire to let KD. Got to remember, This suspension was not to discipline Draymond Green, because they could have did it any kind of way. This suspension was to show KD, listen, we're behind you 100%. And we're going to show you that by suspending him.
So you think...
Because you got to remember, this is a locker room thing. No one hears anything about a locker room unless they want you to hear it. So if you didn't discipline Draymond, what does KD say? So you guys allow him to talk to me like this? So I'm pretty sure that this summer, Draymond is being traded.
That is what
KD wants him to.
You think they'll work it out?
Who?
Jay and KD.
You got to remember, Draymond is expendable now. And you're not going to trade KD right now and lose hopes of winning a championship. So, and KD's irreplaceable. There's only him,
right.
LeBron. You cannot lose them for nothing. Cleveland lost LeBron and got nothing back. You're not going to do the same thing with KD. So they're not going to trade him in the middle of the season. Draymond has, after this season, one more year in his contract. He will be dealt this summer. And so that'll let KD know, listen, this is your team. You and Steph, y'all make the rules here. You know, unfortunately, Draymond put us in a situation where we have to make a decision we probably didn't want.
And they've had issues with him in the past. So, I mean, he's not really helping his cause.
The argument with
Kerr, suspension in the finals was very costly for them. So,
those weigh against him. But no, I mean, the suspension in the finals and all that, those what comes with it. It's out of an 82 game, that's two games Draymond might act the fool. That
was a big game, though.
But it doesn't matter. That's pennies on anything. But that's like somebody just not showing up for two games. You know, it's one of those things. You take the good with the bad. This point is, you went after our best player, and now we have. This is no different than the Shaq and Kobe incident. Shaq pissed off Kobe, and Kobe held that grudge, and he forces. Hey, it's me or him. Mm-hmm. Make your decision. Am I the franchise player now that you guys said I was? Or is it still big fella?
You think KD would do that, though? I mean, we saw what he did with Russ. He was kind of saying, you know what? I'm just done here. You can have Russ.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, at the end,
myself out of
because
this.
At the end of the day, you guys are both right here. Who are you going with, Russ or him? That's a big decision you didn't want to find out. Yeah. Here it's him and Draymond. And Draymond is the bad guy here.
But he was you got to understand, for Draymond, he was the alpha before. His team, in that sense, KD comes in. He's thinking, okay, no way I can be the odd man out.
But he is the odd man out because you're not the best player on the team. You're the fourth best player on the team. So if this was between you and Clay, call it squash. You did this to Curry, big problems. Mm-hmm. You do this to KD, big problems. That's where we are.
But this is being decided by management, not coaching, you're saying?
No. This is coaching. You got to remember, the coaching, this is where coaching has to get a hold of the locker room, because you got to remember, the players respect Draymond Green as the leader, but they understand KD is the best player on this team. Steph is playing MVP basketball right now, but our best player is KD. And if he's upset with you, we're going to follow him. We're not going to follow you, Draymond. So now you have the riff in the locker room. And the coaching staff is saying, wait a minute, before this escalates, KD and team, we're just going to suspend Draymond. What he did was wrong.
Set the tone and nip this.
You got to set, because KD was not going to set the tone. Curry's not going to set the tone because they're not the voices.
Well, KD's involved in it, so he can't.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, those two are not the alphas. Mm-hmm. They're just the best players. So if Draymond decides to run over those two, you could lose the locker room. Because they respect those two play, but they respect his voice. Now you have a shift.
Again, back to the importance of chemistry. This is what the coaches are saying. Like, we have to make this work. We have to make this vibe for the rest of the season. It's November. So they're disciplining one of their stars for the sake of chemistry.
No. Not one of their stars.
He's a star.
They're glued. He's a player. He's a star because
he's an all-star.
Because the team is winning.
Right.
He's a star because of the team is winning. But his play alone and his stats alone is mediocre in the NBA. But because this team is winning, because, like, he got to remember, he's a glue player. We don't know what he would be if he was on another team and he has to be the best guy. But he is a glue player that glues it all together. And his the details and what he does makes him a star. But in his position, and you isolate him in his position alone, power forward, he is not ranked top 15. In his position.
Top 15.
He's not a top 15 power forward in the NBA. But when you add it all together, winning, what he sacrifices, you got to remember, he sacrificed scoring to get these guys the ball. He sacrifices, you know, rebounds and all of this. He puts his body on line. So you don't really know what his stats would be if those two guys were gone. But when you say, I'm going to look at you versus this guy offensively, defensively, like, these guys are better players than you. You just bring something different. He's no different than Dennis Rodman.
Very similar, right?
You know,
Dennis Rodman. Probably more of a rebounder.
But I'm just saying, Dennis Rodman, as a player.
Volatile guys, high energy.
Yeah, but you're not a top go-to guy, power forward. But right. When you bring all what you bring.
The defense.
And your wins, you're getting
what you need. That yeah. I mean, look at also a guy like Joakim Noah. In his prime, you know, same kind of
yeah. Thing. I mean, he's that's so score those, for you. So but. That's what I'm saying. So he's a Golden State star, mm-hmm. But he's not an NBA star.
So put him on Phoenix, not gonna be the same results. No.
But that's what I'm saying. He's a Golden State star. He's not an NBA star.
So if there's a physical fight between teammates versus an argument, which is harder to get over?
Neither. Because at the end of the day, this is what people don't understand. Your teammates. This is not your teammates that's on an 82-game season, 6 months, every day with each other. You're with each other more than you are with your family. So
you're co-workers, but you're traveling together.
But that's what I'm saying. You're going parties together, clubs together. And it's hard to be angry with your teammate that you're at dinner with. And it doesn't, you can't.
Right.
You know, because you got to remember, your real enemy is your opponent every single night. So Draymond's going to need help. Who's going to be there? KD. KD's going to need help. Who's going to be there? Draymond. No matter what, you guys have a bigger war to fight. So you really are not, you can dislike a guy, but your battles and wins and, you know, Clay said it best. We win 3-4 games, nobody remembers this. He's right.
Winning cures all.
Winning sure. cures it all.
But you can't win when there's feuding in the family.
With that kind of talent, yeah, you can.
I mean, we see like
because Shaq you gotta
Kobe,
remember,
back to Shaq
you got to remember. You can hate each other off the court, but when you guys go on the court, you have an understanding.
Which is what
Draymond exactly what is going to pass it to KD. Kobe, I mean, that's right. You know, that's how that works.
But also, they don't have to hang out together. I'm pretty sure they don't hang out together at this point.
I mean, I had teammates that I'd never seen.
Yeah,
I
doesn't
never,
mean you didn't like them.
No, I just never seen them unless we're in practice or games. Mm-hmm. Never seen them at dinner. Never seen them going to the club or never because they just wasn't that dive or they went at different times. You know, who knows? You know, but, you know, when you're on a court, you have an understanding.
So do you think they can play through this and win this year?
Oh, no, they're going to play through it and win this year. But at the end of the day, the decision is still Golden State as an organization to keep KD happy. You're going to have to trade Draymond. Because at the end of the day, if it was as bad as, you know, people say it is. And, I mean, calling him a bitch, mm-hmm. is that... I'm pretty sure he's heard that hundreds of times. So I don't.
We don't know.
I don't. I'm pretty sure we've heard it 100. He's heard it 100 of times. So that's not gonna. It just depends on how petty and despiteful KD is. I mean, I guarantee you, if they can say, "Hey, we'll get rid of Draymond and Clay and bring in Anthony Davis,"
do sure. it. Oh, sure. Yeah. Do it. That's the guy I'm thinking of. If
you do it.
Of course, again, you got to pay all those guys, and KD did take less money to keep guys around.
Yeah. So it's one of those things of what KD wants.
So he's thinking, you can't call me a bitch for the sacrifices I've made.
Yeah, you can. No, I mean not like that, but it's the heat of the moment. You say whatever you.
I think it's
your competitors. That's what people don't understand. When you're a sports competitor, you're competing in the argument. You're competing.
Sure. Right.
So I'm gonna say whatever I think and get under your skin.
But I also think there's times that you use it in ways that you use it.
Not
if I was complaining, I'm tired of where you be, and you said, "Hey, Mike, stop being a bitch, right? You're being a little bitch right now."
But but Draymond Green. It's right. Draymond. So it's not like, Mike, you're being a little bitch. It's you're yelling it so everyone knows you're being a bitch.
Yeah, and we just lost the game. And,
and then now you're going to have to respond.
Like, okay. So it's the way that you use it. And I think the way that he used it in that context, that's the worst way you can use it.
Yeah. Okay. But when you're arguing, it's always the worst way.
Right, but I don't think KD was arguing.
There's been plenty of times where I've called teammates, bitches and female puppies, and they're acting like a little female puppy.
Yeah, but
sitting there just whining.
That's more to motivate.
And then, I've been called the same shit.
Yeah.
That's why Shaq fucking your girl. Like, you hear that during arguments. Yeah. And then, it's like, oh, all right. We'll see next time I drive who gets the ball. We'll see next time that Dirk Nowitzki is posting you up. We'll see if I dig, motherfucker. That motherfucker's about to score 40 on you. But that's my thought process. But when the game happens, I'm not going to let fucking Dirk score 40 on him because I don't want to lose either.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I'm going in the lane and someone helps and fucking someone, Brendan Haywood or someone sitting right there, I'm going to give him the ball. But during that argument fight, that's what's being said.
Right.
Get it off the glass, motherfucker. We'll see if you ever touch the ball in the next 20 games. But yeah.
Right. So the worst way to hurt a guy is not by throwing hands.
It's the same thing. Yeah. To be honest, it's the same thing. You get in a fight and y'all fighting over something. You got to remember, most NBA fights are the dumbest fights in the world. It's the dumbest fight. But you got to remember, you guys are the elite of egos. So you have a roster of 13 and you're respected by your competitiveness. So you got to remember, if one of them back down, that means they're back down against their opponent. That's the problem with sports, is we judge you off of your interaction with your teammates, no matter what it is. There's no in between. So if Kobe challenges one of his teammates, and that teammate doesn't respond, in Kobe's mind, he's not ready.
So you don't have to be on their level of ability. So he was a guy, he went after, remember, Jeremy Lin.
Uh-huh.
Just cooked him because he didn't think he had that dog in him.
Yeah,
he doesn't have. Jeremy Lin didn't have to be Kobe.
But you just have to. You don't have to. You don't have to top him in talent, just in fierceness. Like if Kobe's coming at you, I don't give a fuck if you can't score. You go back at him. Mm-hmm. You challenge him. You pick him up full court. Like you're not gonna just bully me. That's what competitiveness is. So when Kobe says, "Yo, I respect that."
Good shit. Like a guy now like Matt Barnes.
Now he knows, yes, like Matt. That's how Matt got him. Like, he didn't take no, and Ron Artest, mm-hmm. when I went after these guys, they took the challenge to challenge me. The Rajah Bales, that's what Kobe respects. You don't have to score out there and score 30, but I know now that the guy who's trying to score 30 is not going to score it easy because you're going to fight with that guy. That's the kind of teammate you want. So if two got in an argument and one backs down, then he don't have it.
So competitiveness is the ultimate chemistry unifier.
Yeah.
If you all have that competitive fire, that spirit, that'll bring us all together.
Let's say if you take two prime example, Nate Robinson. Nate Robinson got respect from his teammates because he wouldn't take shit from none of them. Like if you challenge Nate and you said something, y'all want to fight the biggest dude. He's jumping at him. He's trying to wrestle him. No matter if he gets body slammed, beat up, that's not the point. That is not the point. We know that little dude right there has our back.
Oh, I mean, for a 5'8" guy to get
but that's what it is. He has my back. So when there's 2 minutes left in the game and the coach looks at the bench.
Who wants it?
Oh, hey, Nate, go. Mm-hmm. Do what you do. And everybody going to feel confident with it. You know when coach makes a bad decision. Like, yo, hey, not him. Come on, coach. He's the way he'll. You know, you have that. But that's what sports brings out. That if you're not there, you will not understand it. And that's where, you know, from – you know, athletes to the public can't understand, like, why are they fighting over someone didn't give them the ball? It's not about that. It's about the competitiveness after the argument started.
Right. So when you have these two type A personalities, these two alphas.
No. A and B. KD is not an alpha. He's just the best player.
He's an alpha in different ways.
He's the best player. He's not an alpha. He doesn't need to be an alpha. He's just the best player. He's not the alpha. He's not the leader. He leads by his scoring ability, but he is not an alpha.
So if he were to go to a team like in New York, he would need another alpha personality.
He would just be out there playing. He'd be out there scoring 30, 35, 40, but will they be winning?
Depends who they put around him.
As I said, I mean, alphas come in, you know, Kevin Garnett. 2004, MVP year. Who was the go-to guy?
Was it Sprewell?
No,
Sam Cassell, right, yeah.
Sam Cassell was the alpha. He was the alpha who controlled that team, made sure everybody was in line. KD, you're fucking around. Sprewell, stop that shit. But, like, he's the alpha of the team. He's the last two-minute guy of the team. He's the one that dictates and tells everybody what they're doing, what they're not going to do.
You don't think KG was the alpha on that Celtics team with Ray and Paul of that group?
Probably of that group.
Brian Scalabrine told me a great story that on the team playing, on that Celtics team playing, they had heated arm wrestling battles, and KG would take on everyone. 30,000 feet in the air. He's got his shirt off. Who wants it? I'm the silverback gorilla in this motherfucking. Mm-hmm. Who is his guy to go at? Big Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Who won?
Probably Big Baby.
KG?
KD won. Uh-huh. But think about it.
We'll have Scal on to tell that story.
You have a skinny power four taking on people in arm. But think about the psychological part of it. It's just psychological.
I'm not going to lose.
Yeah, it's just psychological.
I'm the biggest dude out here. Dude on the playground.
Yeah, I'm the gorilla of this team. Who wants to challenge me? Right. We're going to do it arm wrestling. But it's all psychological. Mm-hmm. Now, if all of them back down, like he's expecting everyone to test him. If someone be like, nah, I'm good, he's going to be like, oh, he don't have it. He don't have it. He's not going to step up for the challenge. He's not going to challenge me. So that means he's not going to challenge whoever's challenging us. It's just more ego than anything.
So there's a point in your career where you're always looking for that challenge because you want to win everything. And then I think it swings to where you want to challenge everybody to see what they have.
Yes.
Because I've proven myself. Gotten to the mountaintop.
Like Kobe, towards his end, you got to remember, he's looking at who's going to compete with me. So I'm going to challenge everyone. To see who has it. And then you heard him in an interview. Oh, these motherfuckers don't got it, man. They don't want to. Because when he was challenging, nobody stepped up to the challenge.
It's a situation.
Yeah.
Quite a situation.
They'll get over it.
Yeah, I think they will.
Draymond's gone, though.
That's the thing. If they go, I guess they would move him before. They can't move him before they re-sign KD, though.
No, trust me. The rumors would be if he's going to be traded, the rumors are going to go around free agency to let KD know he's gone.
Okay. Yeah. We shall see. That's a situation. Mm-hmm. Another situation we have is this this deal with Melo in Houston. 10 games in, they basically put him on ice for 2 games, saying he's sick. But it looks like it's not going to work, and they're going to part ways.
No one ever.
Is this a fit problem or an age problem?
No one ever listens.
Daryl Morey should have listened to you.
I said it when he first went into being a free agent, after he got
signed,
bought out. Go to the Lakers. You fit better. You know, the ideal of, I can understand what he was thinking about. Like, they play a high-level offense. You know, they got Chris Paul, who's a pass guy. They got
Harden.
James Harden's a pass guy. They shoot a bunch of threes. Oh, I'm going to get so much. I'm going to average 20. I'm going to be back. I seen it and said, wrong. No. That's not the way to look at this. You're a half-court player. You're a ISO player on the right side. Oh, well, the left block. You're, that mid-range. Unfortunately, that's where Chris Paul's like to does his ISOs. So you're technically the third option when it comes to ISOs and the third option when it comes to scoring. Why would you put yourself in that situation if you just failed in OKC? If you went to the Lakers, they don't have a fourth quarter player, one. They don't have a half court player. You are the first option in that. The last 2 minutes, LeBron's giving you the ball. What you're looking at is you might come off the bench for the Lakers, but you will be the go-to guy versus starting. He went after starting. And he ended up coming off the bench anyway. But I said it from the beginning that, no. Your talent needs to be under LeBron because LeBron needs a go-to guy. Do not go to Houston. So when I look at his stats, makes sense. Like, I don't understand. How do you go from shooting 82% from the free throw line your whole career to go down to 68%?
That's weird. The other percentages are okay. Field goal and three. Those are on.
Yeah, your field goal percentage, 49.
And his numbers, 30 minutes a game is more than I actually thought it would be before I checked that out. Free throws, I mean.
No, free throws, that's a big indicator. You're shooting 83% basically for your career to 68. You're mentally done. Like, that's mental. Free throw line is mental at that level. And you're just chucking. Like, this year, averaging 13, he's shooting the most three-point attempts than he ever has. He's shooting 6.4. The second highest was, like, 2012.
Yeah.
But you're shooting.
It's a good year for him.
But you're averaging 13, shooting 6.4 threes a game. That means.
But that's also a product of D'Antoni's system.
Yeah, but that's not your game. Your game is ISOs. Your game is, mid-range block. Like, you're playing a game that's not your game. That's just not your game. Why are you doing something that you don't do? Because you want to run around and chuck it and shoot threes?
I mean, I think the move for him to go to Houston was for a championship, though. So he wanted to be in
the best winning situation. They didn't have no chance of winning the championship with Melo. Not because of Melo, but you got rid of all your glue guys to bring in Melo.
That was the bigger loss.
Because now attraction. You don't, like, Melo's never been a defensive player.
No.
Never been a defensive player. For being 6'9", wasn't a great rebounder at that. He was just a one-sided. When he first came in, they said, he is big dog. Mm-hmm. He's a better big dog. Okay, that means
a modern version.
Yeah, he's just an offensive player, Dan, and that's basically how he played his career.
Guess what? A lot of guys have had a career,
but he had no other attributes. He has no other. So when you took away all your defensive players and brung in just another offensive player, which you're making him the third option, it kind of showed that you're going to digress, and that's what happened.
You know, one thing probably was one of the best moves the Knicks ever made. Realizing it was about time to let him go.
It's not him.
Yeah, but you can't. You would force it to try to make him other things that he's not. I think that's a clear.
You know, when he was in Knicks, they never built a team around him. What they did was they wasted his youth or his prime, just letting him be a scorer instead of putting a team around him that was gonna help him. You know, like in Denver, you know, before those years when they brought in Chauncey Billups and all, that was Melo at his best.
Yeah.
You had an alpha male.
That was his best window.
You got to remember, you had an alpha male in Chauncey. You had the leader. You had your Kenyon Martins, who was alpha male also, but on the defensive end, and, you know, who kept the locker room. So you had a, you know, with Camby and them, you had control, you know. You had leadership. Once Melo became the leader, you didn't have nothing.
That's not really who he is, right?
No.
Not his strong suit.
No.
Strong suit, leadership. But
there's a reason he thrives in the USA games, and he did. It's because you have all the leaders there. Y'all figure out that shit. I'm just going to be hitting these shots. That's what you need to have Melo in.
But he would have expected that in Oklahoma with Westbrook and Paul George. You guys do.
Yeah, but you know, but again, it's like the situations he's in and he's been put in doesn't fit his game. You know, the success he's had in his career of ISOing and being an ISO guy, when you took that away from him, what does he have? Like James Harden. If you take the ball out of his hand, what does he have? Can he be Klay Thompson and come off down screens, flare screens, up screens? Can he post up? No.
He wouldn't be as effective.
He wouldn't be effective. Because for the most part, most of these guys don't work on an all-around game anymore. You know, so like when you look at what makes Steph Curry, he doesn't have to have the ball to score. He come off down screens. He comes off flare screens, pick and roll, pops. He scores other than just sitting there with the ball 100 dribbles a game.
But for Harden, they can't stop him on the ISO. So
yeah, okay, he's not going to add that. What happens when he slows down?
Right. No, absolutely.
You got to remember.
Well, Melo is a good example.
At the end of the day, you all slow down.
Yes.
We all slow down. But what happens? Can you still be effective?
Yeah, so I think
so. So if you're going in the summer and your whole workout is combo, 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 step back, shoot. When they take the ball out of your hand, do you know how to do anything else? Do you know how to post up? Do you have a mid-range game? Do you have back doors? And, you know, that's why, you know, the Jimmy Butlers is, you know, they're important. Because you can take the ball out of Jimmy's hand, and Jimmy's still going to get you 10, 12, because he's going to backdoor. He's going to ice. I mean, you have
different ways.
Yeah, you can be effective for scoring any other way.
And even as you age, say you're incredibly athletic. You're a leap. Like, so this is a good example for Russ. When he ages, to still stay effective, he has to adjust his game.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe work on your, like Jordan did, right?
Yeah, you're working on the back to the back master the game. Like, that's what I said. All these guys are so used to being, I'm scoring all my plays, ticking everybody off the dribble. You know, it's, you know, this, that's, you got a one-sided basketball game. You know, if I can't put you on a mid post and you can be effective, if you have a smaller guy on you, I put you in the post, you know, I put you in a corner, I run you off the baseline double screen. Like, if you guys got to be complete players.
Right. And not to mention the league is so advanced now, they're going to take away your strong suit. They're going to obviously focus on that, so you have to counter it.
Age takes away that. It's like you have to be understanding of how the game evolves and how your body evolves with it. And I don't think players – I don't think all players understand that. But
I also don't think players recognize when they're getting older. That's a humbling thing to realize that you don't have it like you used to have it.
You still have something. At 34, I mean, he was averaging, you know, 22 a game 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big drop.
His attempts have also fallen off too, though.
But again, you're talking about a guy from 19 years old mm-hmm. up until 34 that trains one way. Because mm-hmm. that's all he's done. Because he's been successful. You know, I don't think, I guarantee you he wasn't working on down picks and coming off flare screens and, you know, coming off baseline baseline moves. And no, because he can't see the slowness in his game. He can't see, he doesn't have the lift because he's practicing by himself. You know, and that's why it's hard for a player to see he doesn't have it anymore.
But wouldn't you be able to realize that when you're not only just working out, but playing games?
Yeah, well, the reality checks comes in a game. First time. It comes right here.
But even before the season, in the summertime, those runs.
No, because summertime, no one's pushing you. There's no structure there.
Lazy defense.
Yeah, there's no lazy defense. We're just out here fucking around. I'm hitting shots, busting your ass. You know, you don't really see it until it's competition time. And that might be too late. You done already trained the whole summer, and it's too late now.
The thing for him, though, I always thought his game would age well because it wasn't really built around athleticism.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't built. It was built off of mid-range deception, but he's not in those situations anymore. And because you're not in that situation anymore where you're ISOing on that block, that's Chris Paul's area. You're not handling. You're not doing the pick and roll. You're a corner shooter. And from, you know, looking at your career, if you're 34 and you're shooting more threes now than you did when you were a very active player, it says a lot that I don't think you went into the summer knowing you were going to be a corner three-point shooter. So you need to be taking 1,000 threes, you know, to understand this is what you're going to be doing. No, you probably said in the summer, working on your ISOs, working on your what's the names, and everything you worked on, that's not how they're playing you.
But you don't think he should retire. You think he should go to the right team.
That talk is out there. No.
Well, 34.
You're 34 years old. You're shooting 49% from the field.
So
you're shooting 50. You're just not getting the tips because you're sitting in the corner. That ball is going through James Harden. And if James Harden doesn't have it, Chris Paul. If he doesn't have it, we'll find Melo somewhere along the line. You're an afterthought in that offense. Go to a place where you're a real thought.
I mean, my option for him, Portland.
Afterthought.
But you're saying he'd have to be the focal point in offense. I don't know that he's at that point.
He's a focal point. The last two,
to be the third option.
The last 2 minutes is where he thrives.
But you don't think guys like Damon McCollum, they'll draw those.
That's their guy. He's not a corner. It's like a Tesla, right? What is this attribute?
Efficiency and luxury.
It starts off. Right? It's probably one of the fastest starting cars out. But will it be the Ferrari? So it's basically saying, okay, this car is good in the first 40 yards. And you challenge a guy in a mile who has a Lamborghini or what's the name. You're doing a disjustice to your ability, that car's ability. You can only drive 100 miles, but you want to take it from here to Vegas. You're doing a disjustice. So him going to a place where you have two ISO guys, two guys who create for themselves, you're going to be put in a situation again where there are 1 and 2. Fourth quarter goes to Damon. If Leonard doesn't have it, goes to McCullough. You're an afterthought. If I say Lakers, who gets the ball in the last 2 minutes? If you say, there you go. That's where you fucking go. You go to a place where you say, that's where you fucking go, right there.
And we know he can play. We know he's boys with LeBron, can play with LeBron. We've seen it before.
Because LeBron needs a guy he can give the ball to and take the pressure off himself. Head to the Lakers, my
Seems right. Seems right. All right, one more situation. Everyone's talked about the move for Jimmy to Philly, but what he left behind in Minnesota. Are these guys actually better off without him?
Better off mentally? Yes. Yeah, I mean, mentally.
That's where it starts.
I mean, mentally, they're better off. As a team, of course not. I mean, you lost an all-star, a two-way player, a guy who brung, you know, just so many intangibles to the team. But, you know.
But he brought what he brought, but it didn't exactly work out. You would have thought he would bring that dog mentality, and I think he tried to put it into those guys that they're not wired.
But see, that's where the head-butting comes in at. That
the chemistry.
It's not chemistry. That's not chemistry. Like, lazy players want to be around other lazy players, you know? So if you got a guy in there who has this motor to win, to want to win around lazy players, they don't respond. I'm not saying, you know, Townsend and Wiggins and them are a lazy group. It's just they didn't respond to what Jimmy brung. Wiggins, I mean, now there's a new pecking order. Townsend, because Townsend was playing bad too. You know, he was playing horrible. So now, you know, Townsend, number one option. Wigan, number two option. So individually, those two players are going to get better because they get the ball more.
Statistically, though.
Statistically.
Wins-wise.
No, they're not going to.
Because I feel like with the addition of Covington and Sarch, but Covington in particular, wasn't that great of a drop-off for what he gives you numbers-wise? But again, it's back to that edge that I don't know that those guys are really adding anything that bring that.
They're not going to make the playoffs. They didn't. I mean, you
see. I feel like the wins actually will be where they would. They will keep them in the playoffs.
No.
Okay.
They don't have. What do they have? Nothing. You don't. You don't
we'll see what they have.
They don't have anything. They have a young Wiggins who still hasn't found his niche. You have Townsend who's playing not up to where he did last year. So he's took a couple steps back. So they don't have the mojo. They're not the same team. You know, they didn't go out and get anything better. They have Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose, who's playing a lot better. But you're still missing. You're still missing it. You let it go.
But it didn't work.
Because you didn't pay him.
But it didn't work.
Didn't pay him.
That too. But he was unhappy being there.
Because you didn't pay him.
Yeah.
You're like, but that move, like, so it's like,
why didn't they pay him?
I don't know. You got to ask
that. Because it wasn't working.
What wasn't working?
He wasn't vibing with those other players. So when they realized that was off, they said, this guy's a live wire. Maybe we stick with our young, easygoing guys.
Yeah, easygoing.
Might not get him anywhere.
Yeah, but that's exactly. Easygoing ain't going to get you fucking nothing.
Ability only gets you so far.
At the end of the day, I mean, let's look at them. They traded, I mean, the decision making for them is not the fucking greatest. Let's just say that.
No, not really.
I mean, so it's not like that whoever's running the organization makes amazing, you know, decision making and talent, because you did have, you know, Zach LaVine and all these guys, and look at them now, you know. So it's like
whoa. They also drafted Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio and could have had Steph. So they have a history of.
I mean, you can do that with anybody, but you know, it's.
Did they need 2 point guards?
No,
but draft? In the lottery, not a good call.
I mean, Johnny Flynn, hip, you know, he had a hip problem. But I wouldn't pick anybody that small anyway. That small with that kind of athleticism in a lottery. Because you got to remember.
And Rubio was nice for him. I'm not saying he was a bad pick, but you didn't.
He's a solid, but that's what I'm saying. He's a solid player. He's a solid player. My thing with, you know, smaller guys is this. For a top lottery pick, I want versatility in a player. I don't want a pigeonholed player where you're 6 foot. That means you can play the point. That's it. I'd rather take a 6'7", 6'8", guy who's a shooting guard, has great creativity, where I can put him at the point.
Unless you're an absolute fucking stud, Chris Paul.
Yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day,
those don't come around too often.
Nah.
So for Minnesota, if they knew that they weren't going to keep Jimmy, they did do all right for what they traded him for.
To be honest, not even going to lie.
If he walks this summer and they didn't get anything back.
What did they trade him for?
Covington, Saric, and a draft pick, second rounder.
So nothing. Got it.
Don't say nothing. No.
Nothing.
Okay.
Covington going to be an all-star?
No.
Nothing. Okay. Let's
go. But will Towns be an all-star?
Towns was already an all-star. They already had him.
Yep.
You already had him.
What they want is Wiggins to be an all-star, I think.
That's they fucking work out. Fucking train.
So you're building around them.
Wouldn't you have built around three of them?
The
Jimmy Butler
experiment, the worst thing they did was what they traded him for. You're singling Zach.
Yeah, you traded him for nothing.
Should have kept Zach.
Yeah. That's basically. So at the end of the day, you lost Zach for Covington. When you bring it all down. Mm-hmm.
But that's also on Tibbs.
Does
wanting Jimmy?
I think Philly comes out on this deal. Very, very disappointed in Ben Simmons.
As far as what?
What he's doing.
Like or what he's not doing.
I don't know if the organization's got in his head or people around him, but I'm looking at his play. And I'm saying, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what are you, like, what are you out there trying to achieve? Are you trying to achieve being a point guard? Because your team is losing because of you. You're the biggest reason that your team is losing.
What should he be doing?
Attacking. Mm-hmm. Trying to drop 30. Trying to score 40. Because the more aggressive you are at 6'11", that means anytime you cross the three-point line, you're a fucking danger. That team, yeah, Embiid is the best player. It's like KD and Russell. Yes, KD can survive without Russell, but the rest of the team can't survive without you. So the fact that you're letting Embiid be dominant is great, but the rest of the players are lacking because you are not dominant. And the fact that you're not using your 6'11 body to be at that rim, you got to remember, if you're attacking, that means they're trying to stop you. If they're trying to stop you, that means J.J. Redick is open. That means Markell is open. That means all the players who can't create for themselves is open because you are attacking. They have to stop the ball. So if you're going to average 10 assists, the only way you're going to do it is if you're in an offensive attack mode because it becomes easier to pass the ball if four people are sticking you. But if you're going to sit there with a 6'11 body just trying to make passes around the perimeter, it doesn't work.
Right, and there's they know you're not going to shoot.
There's a reason Harden averages 10. You got to remember, our top two leading assists for the last 3 years were shooting guards, basically. People who shot the ball 100 times. Like, Russell, shoot first, pass second, mm-hmm. led the league in assists. Harden, shoot first, pass second, led the league in assists. Like, if you're a pure point guard, you should be you should be pissed off that two, technically, in my era, ball hogs lead the league in assists. One, because if they're trying to score 100, you have to stop them. So that means the defense is sitting in the lane waiting for them. So that means every pass they make, if it's only 20 a game, because those guys are wide fucking open, it's high volume shots for those guys. And that's what Ben Simmons is taking away from his team. He's taking away the ability to hit open shots because he's not aggressive anymore. And it started last year in the playoffs, where in some way he just stopped being dominant.
I think it's because of the shooting, where the defenders backed off him and they were saying, "We'll let you shoot."
Oh, I didn't know. Is Greek the Freak shooting threes? Oh, so, oh my God! Someone is Greek the Freak out there being Curry?
I'm gonna bring that name.
No, no.
He's aggressive.
I'm 6'11". He's
being aggressive, right?
How far are you gonna back off me? You're 6'11". How far are they gonna back off? They're gonna sit at the free throw line. 1-2 euro. You're at the rim. 1-2 dribble, you're at the rim. They can't. What are you talking about? Gobble up that space. Like, they're giving you a free lane if they're going to back off. Get it and drive. What are they going to do? Who's going to block you? The person who's sticking you, which is a power forward?
So, is Jimmy going to help?
Bad coaching.
Is Jimmy going to help?
Bad coaching. I will call timeout. Yo, hey, listen, Ben, I'm sorry. I don't know what the fuck you're doing out there. I don't know what the fuck you're doing out there. No, you four sit down. I don't need to talk to y'all. You. Hey, you only shot 3 shots today. I'm going to let you know right now. If you don't shoot 16 to 20 shots a game, I'm benching you. Flat out. All right, timeout over. Go out there and play. That's my speech to him. If you don't attempt 16 to 20 shots a game, you're doing me a disjustice. Then you need to sit the fuck down.
So he needs the green light if he doesn't have it already.
He should have the green light.
But if you're saying it's bad coaching, they haven't.
It's bad coaching. Yeah. They're not on him to let him know. Listen, hey, Ben, listen, I don't need you to go out there and go 10 assists. I don't know what all that, who you trying to be. I don't know if you're trying to be Magic, or I don't know what the fuck you're trying to do. But we got to remember, Magic averaged these assists because he was aggressive. Mm-hmm. He came in. He was showtime. You passing the ball around when you are the advantage. You're the advantage on a team. Every night you step on that court, you're a 6'11 point guard. You have the advantage. Because whoever's guarding you is not trained to stick you above the free throw line.
But don't you think every time, back to how they're guarding him, backing off him to shoot, he's thinking, I'm just going to take it to the post. That's where that's where he wants to get to.
Then he needs to watch Rondo. To
create for himself.
He needs to watch Rondo. We backed off of Rondo, mm-hmm. Sit at the free throw line. Rondo drove it right at our heads and said, what are you going to do? You're going to back up some more? You're gonna back up under the basket?
Right up to the basket.
You're gonna back up into the basket? What are you gonna do? I'm at the free throw line now. I'm gonna shoot this shot if you back up. But that's what it is. If someone's sitting at the free throw line and you're at the three, drive the ball. What are they gonna do? You're already in the lane. 1-2, you're at the rim. Half these people are gonna get dunked on sitting at the free throw line waiting for you. But your team is losing because you're not aggressive.
Well, they have Jimmy Butler now. That should help. That back to the kind of guy that
But I think that's going to hurt him more because now he thinks he needs to give Jimmy and these guys the ball. No, you need that for Jimmy and Embiid. Yeah, Embiid can create his own shots, but trust me, if you're driving and his man is trying to help, dump offs is easier. Mm-hmm. They become easier.
Yeah.
They become easier. The reason Blake Griffin was great and he didn't create one shot for himself is because Jamal Crawford was creating baskets. Chris Paul sitting there driving. You got to stop him from scoring. Boom.
Blake can finish.
Here comes the track star.
Yeah.
Here comes the triple jump champ coming down the lane, dunking
on your head.
But it comes from somebody stopping the ball. They have to stop him. So he has to step up his scoring ability. He don't have to shoot. Just fucking drive. They're not going to stop you. You're 6'11". You're not a 5'10 guy. You're a 6'11 guy who can shoot with your left and your right around the basket.
Work with that.
Hey.
So Jimmy's the alpha now.
Huh?
Jimmy's the alpha.
Nah, Embiid is the alpha.
Yeah? I think that is the best combination of what they have, of their three. The Jimmy and Joel.
Again, it's only going to work if Ben starts playing to his ability. And stop trying to sacrifice. Because your sacrifice is sacrificing team wins. Because at the end of the day, Joel Embiid, for the most part, has a mismatch.
Every time.
Every night.
Yeah.
82 games, you are a mismatch.
Ben is a mismatch.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All 82 games, absolutely. You have the mismatch. You have to take advantage because it helps everyone else. And I learned that from Eddie Jordan and Ernie Grunfeld that, hey, listen, if you want to get these guys the ball, fucking drive.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean drive? The defense has to stop the ball. It has to collapse. That's how Deshaun Stevenson is going to get that open three in the corner because his man is going to have to come and help you. You know, Brendan with a little dump off. These guys score because you're trying to score 40 every night. I thought, well, okay, good. Because I'm going to try to score 40 every night.
Yeah, we knew what you were going to do. But yeah. Coaching, yeah.
Coaching.
Need to establish that. So we'll find out. We got some situations.
Yeah.
But it's early still, like we said. So people need to calm down. They'll figure it out.
It's early, but when you look at some of these teams, it's like, eh. Mm-hmm. You can see it early. Eh. Like with the Lakers, it's early, but I'm not worried about them
mm-hmm.
because their players are playing hard. They're still trying to figure out. It's this. LeBron's trying to figure out who my fourth quarter player is.
Just might be Melo pretty soon.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, who, you know, Hart right now is showing that he is capable of mm-hmm. getting buckets.
And then Rondo broke his hand, so.
Yeah, Ingram is still trying to, you know, figure out what his game is.
Not the fourth quarter guy, though, Ingram.
I don't know who his trainer is in the summer, but he needs to train different. That's all. You know, I watch how he plays, and he doesn't take advantage of his length. You know, when he drives small, and by the time he unravels all of his length, they done gobbled up his space, and he's easily pushed off of anywhere he's trying to go. And it has nothing to do with strength. It has to do with reaction. He's not trained to react off of hits. Like when I played, you know, if you look at the highlights, that I was guarded by two guards and threes for the most part because I sat in a post on point guards. We're going to be in the post, little fella. You know, everybody was. If it had PG in your name, you was getting posted up 100% of the time. I don't give a shit. You're getting posted up, little man. Like, you can be 6'5". You're getting – Jason Kidd, you're getting posted up, little man. Like, it was one of those. You know, so when I played against – so I was sitting with twos and threes. But the reason they had a hard time is because at the end of the day, you can cut me off once. You're not going to cut me off twice. Because I'm going to feel when you have the advantage, and once you have the advantage with one shoulder or two shoulders in front of me, I'm changing directions and cutting you off. That's what Ingram doesn't understand right now. And a lot of kids, like, if you cut me off, change direction.
Yeah, I have to counter that.
I'm going to counter that, keep you in front of me. Because, again, remember, a great defensive player, like a Kawhi, he can beat you to one spot, maybe two. He can't beat you to all three. Mm-hmm. So if you are not training on what it feels like to want some, like, it becomes natural. You need to train on, if I feel this guy in front of me, change direction. Because he's, bye-bye, see you. And I don't, you know, that's where Ingram needs to learn how to train.
Yeah, he's taking that first shot and saying, okay, I don't got it.
There's no such thing.
Right.
If you cut me off, counter move. Mm-hmm.
So he has to put that counter in his bag.
Yeah, he needs to.
He should by now have had that.
No. You got to remember, he's still growing. He's still trying to figure out what he is. He's only 22.
Okay.
Young. That's a young man right
now. It is young, but you would figure by his third season, he has some things figured out.
I mean, come on, let's look at it. We got Steph Curry, who's a Hall of Famer. That didn't kick in until 26, 27.
So, he had to get his ankles right.
But it's still 26, 27.
Yeah.
And then he took off. Mm-hmm. Same thing. You still have time. Especially, for sure. Especially if the kid is a worker. Yeah. And when you watch Ingram,
that's what we
have to see. You know, with Ingram, it looks like he goes out. He plays hard. He does play hard. He plays hard. He just has to be taught how to score easier.
How to be effective.
Yeah.
He's not efficient.
It's like you're too long. Like you can, if you had the right trainer, me, you wouldn't be stopped. I'm no offense against Miles Simons and them, but you know, it's just, if you never played the game at a level and understood angles and what a defense supposed to do. Like I that's what I was good at. You know, I know what you're supposed to do, and I know what type of player. If you're an over-athletic player, I know what you're going to do when I hit this with the step back. I know what you're going to do if you're a quick player or a slow player. Like if I'm playing against somebody like, which was two of the hardest guards that gave me trouble was Telfair and Marcus Banks.
Because they were so quick?
They were quick. See, I'm fast. I was fastest. You know, me and Tony Parker were the two fastest. But they were quick and stocky. You know, the TJ Fours was quick, but they were little. So if I decide to change direction, I can just hold them off. But, you know, with Telfair and Marcus, they were stocky. And they were laterally quick. So when I tried to take off, they can hold me there.
They were there to muscle.
So, and if I tried to back up and catch that speed, they'd just gobble up the space. So with them two, I had to always pass the ball up. Like, all right, Larry, you're the point guard. I'm just going to go into the post with the little guys. And then that's where I had to. But they changed my game when I had to play against them.
But you had something to go to. They didn't take away from you.
They took something away from you. But you got to remember, if they were quicker, they took away damn near all my fast breaks. If I didn't already was moving, like if they scored, I couldn't just beat anybody down the court like I used to. Like I get the ball and I'm gone and I'm like John Wall. But because they were quick and strong, that when I got ready to turn, they're right there. And it's like, ah, okay, there you go. So now it became more of a half court chess game with these two. You know, and if anybody look at it, like I remember Telfair saying I was the hardest, you know, player he played against, but he forced that. Because he didn't give me my way. So now I got to sit here and battle with him.
Which is great to watch.
Yeah, it's great. You want to see that. But, you know, you're talking about a player who, you know, wasn't considered a star player in the NBA. Right. And he's making me battle. He had the grit and the grime. And, you know, and he can proclaim and say, hey, listen, I'm the only player and with team that he didn't score 30 on. Like.
The only one?
Yeah. Wow. Portland is the only team that didn't score 30 on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was the guard. Because it's like, my 28? Oh, it was hard 28.
Yeah. You had your work cut out for you that
day. Yeah. Because that's what I said. He took away my fast breaking speed. So I would have to pass the ball, run up the court, set a play, drop it in the post, you know, and score that way, and made it hard. See, so, you know, most of Telfair, he had to see me in a post. And that's where it become difficult for him, because I'm sitting in the post, because he took away my pick and roll game. He took away my full, you know, my full
ISO stuff. Yeah.
He took away all that.
Well, Brandon Ingram this summer is invited to the Agent Zero Academy.
Oh yeah. We're taking in all NBA players.
All right, that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother segment, you know, right now. But y'all gonna see these little kids getting it. I got these little kids getting it right now.
What are we gonna call them? The Agent Zero Warriors. Assassins?
No, I call them the future. The future.
Okay. Future's coming.
The future. All right. And any of you trainers out there that want to come in and bring your play, hey, fine with me. Whatever's getting these kids better. I'm not, it's training kids, training trainers. You know, because you got to remember, the game evolves when everyone gets smarter and more efficient at what they're doing. So, you know, I have, you know, trainers on board, you know, Dash, TNT, Trev. You know, I got these guys on board and teaching them how to retrain and retraining and how they're teaching. Because, you know, these guys got all the tangibles, but they don't know how to use them. And that's what I'm there for.
And the reality is, the game evolves. You have to adapt to it.
The game evolves. True, but the basics don't.
The same principles apply.
Yeah.
There's always a mismatch. Man,
my job is to create.
There's always a counter that you have to go to.
My game is, my training is to create all around offensive players. So if you take something away, they have something else. You take that away, oh, they got one more thing. You know, like there's no such thing as great defense. Oh, I used to hate when someone says, oh, great defense. No, that was just bad offense. I just had bad offense. Like, my coach, Eddie Jordan, is going to say, great offense or bad offense. No such thing as great defense. I don't know what you're talking about. If you stopped me, it's because I just took a bad shot. But you didn't. There's no.
I just had to work harder.
You didn't stop me. There was no such thing as stopping me. It's either I done took a bad shot or, goddammit, I scored on you. Well, I'm not giving you no credit. Yeah, I'm not going to let you think you're a great defensive player. You're a bad defensive player. I just took a bad, horrible shot. I keep my ego up. We build ego over here,
baby. You lose your confidence.
We build ego over here. You know, confidence is the key.
The future. All right. We'll look forward to the future.
All right.
See you next time.
She have talked to me, and me have talked to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. She have talked to me, and me have talked to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally.